Hello, insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is Bruce Ash, along with co-host
Ev Wilkinson,
sanitized and welcoming you to a special edition of Inside Track. We have a great show for you again this afternoon. After we chat with our special lead-off guest, we'll hear from Dr. Evelyn Higgins, Ph.D., who will talk to us about the effects of isolation on people who are cooped up in lockdown. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear from friend of the show and activist Sean Fund to bring us up to date on the Missing in America project. And concluding our show today, the former National Security Advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney, Stephen J. Yates, will join us to finish up a very action-packed hour. It's been another whirlwind week. The stock market continues to gyrate. The virus and related news continues to dominate the news. Application for SBA loans has started. Congress mulls their next action. Republicans talking about ways to flatten the virus curve, help American workers, and Democrat socialists trying to flatten the president's reelection chances, yet with another investigation. Congressman David Schweikert is our first guest. He has served the 6th Congressional District in Arizona since 2011, has become the de facto congressional member for the 2nd and 3rd Congressional Districts, also south of the Gila. David, I hold you in the highest regard. All of us in Baja, Arizona, appreciate your service to us here and the wealth of information you provide us in the Democrat socialist occupied area called Southern Arizona. Welcome to Inside Track. Why are the Democrats talking about more investigations and less about the next phase in COVID-19 relief?
But let's take a step backwards. If we were going to do politics, which at some point, you know, if you're a Democrat member of Congress, what do you do to raise money? What do you do to activate your base? The Democrat base is substantially right now has spent the last 2 years sort of bathing in rage.
Mm-hmm.
Last 3 years bathing in rage. Right now they're distracted. So as we hopefully get through this, will the Democrats, particularly in the U.S. House, have built the mechanisms so they can go back and start to pump up that rage again, which actually gets the fundraising machines working and the activists excited once again?
Meanwhile, people are dying. Look, you're out of self-quarantine. How are you feeling? How's Joyce? How's little Olivia?
Look, we're blessed. Everyone's doing just terrific, and I just ran down the street and got my haircut because apparently I won't be able to get a haircut for a while. So,
well, David, no worries. I used to cut hair in the Marine Corps. I can take care of you.
Yes, I have the funny feeling I would come out bald.
Oh, no, you'll have a little bit of hair.
Oh, a little spiky. All right.
Yeah, in a bag.
High and tight. So, David, you have a unique perspective many don't have because of your own self-quarantine issues that you had. Yeah. In Arizona, we passed a right to try amendment to our Constitution. The use of this quinine derivative plus a Z-Pak and zinc are thought to be a possible alternative to treat the virus. I'm not a doctor, neither are you, but you were exposed. Had you been tested positive, developed a bad case, would you have considered use of the cocktail for yourself if there was no other way to save your life?
Look, if there's no other way to save your life, I'm a huge fan of the right to try. And as you know, we've also passed that at the federal level now.
Yeah.
I'm also one of those who is sort of fixated on what's the math. And if we start to get some data out that says, hey, there's efficacy here that works, then you pursue it. When we look back on this, I think one of the things we're going to discover is the way we approved drugs in the U.S., the way we approved medical equipment, it sort of become calcified. It become somewhat bureaucratic.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredibly safe, incredibly accurate, but it turns out with the ability to do big data today, that the algorithmic and the statistical models, a lot of things can go much, much, much faster and still be incredibly safe. And one of the most powerful things that could help us to get out of this is finally knowing that there's a drug cocktail,
sure,
something out there that if you have the disease and it's being really rough on you, that we can do some things to those pharmaceuticals and procedures that you don't lose your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because that all of a sudden starts changing what we've been so concerned about, which is an overwhelming our ICU beds, our ventilators, those things. If we have a drug protocol, all of a sudden the real reason we have all this separation and the economic shutdown is the fear of overflowing our hospitals starts to go away.
So going from the micro, which is David, or me, or Eb, I'd like to ask you a question about the extent of the threat of COVID-19 and the economic impact to Americans. Just an anecdotal microcosm of this. In California, 700 people die per day, every day, from natural causes, according to an official report, or as official report as we're going to get in the LA Times. As many as 20 Californians died per day due to the virus in the past week. California's population is nearly 40 million. It's the fifth largest economy in the world at $2.75 trillion. Obviously, some action was necessary by local and federal authorities, but if the number of daily deaths was even 5 or 6 times greater than experienced so far, was the response to shut down the virus worth the pain and dislocation that it's created? And is it possible there could have been some sort of a regionalized response that would not have had the negative impact all across the country, it seems, in jobs and the economy?
Let's do it sort of backwards on that.
Okay.
There's modelers out there who say it would have had higher efficacy or just similar efficacy if you could have taken those who are older or had immune issues, yep, or had more likely health difficulties and ask those people, demand those people sequester themselves. But the model is about not overwhelming the hospitals, because horrific things happen if you become Italy, where at a certain point you have no more hospital beds, you have no more ventilators, and as a society you're making really brutal decisions. So I wouldn't actually fixate on today's number coming out of a place like California or even Arizona.
Well, they're going to change in the next 2 weeks or so.
Yeah. And so I think what you have to do is, we are where we're at. How do we do this as well as possible? How do we make sure that our small businesses and independent contractors know what programs we have to get through this? How do we then to move as fast as we can to see if we have pharmaceuticals and those things that can stop the most devastating part of the disease? And once we have some of those mechanisms laid out, then we hopefully can get back to what America is great at, which is doing business.
Well, you know,
because go ahead.
We had in 2017, 2018, the CDC said there's about 49 million illnesses, 22 million medical visits, 959,000 hospitalizations, and 79,400 deaths just from the flu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what are you saying with that in regards to how this really differs and the response taken?
What differs is the potential that you wake up one day and the spread, because of the spread being so aggressive, that there's not a hospital bed to be found in an ICU unit, that there's not a ventilator to be found. So that's actually what you're trying to mitigate. And it turns out those two numbers sort of have driven much of President Trump's policies.
And that's what we're going to find out in the next, you know, 2-3 weeks or so, what kind of strain there is.
We may look back on this and say the Swedish model worked, where saying we want those who are older and more vulnerable to isolate. We just don't know yet. I'm actually intensely concerned of the economic brutality,
yep,
that we've engaged in. When I'm looking at some of the numbers coming out of my joint economic team, it's really, really, really rough out there. So how do we actually make sure that these small entrepreneurs and those things in our community, we've actually helped them understand what resources there are so they can survive? Because at this point, we're going to have a lifetime to do the postmortems and understand what we should have done, where we failed, what we thought we knew that we got wrong, because we already have some examples like that where we had a much more aggressive curve for some states that hasn't happened, and some places like New York and New Jersey and now Louisiana have gotten much worse faster than we expected. So sometimes you don't know what you don't know. But how do we get out of this economically? And
well, Congressman, let's make a date, okay? Because we're up against the first break. We got to go. But let's make a date. Let's say 3-4 weeks from now, we're going to meet again, and you can return at that time, and let's talk about where we're at. And
I would enjoy that.
And see if we beat that. So see you down the road. Thanks very much.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Bruce.
When we return from the break, Dr. Evelyn Higgins will join us to discuss isolation in the era of COVID-19. You're listening to Inside Track. Go use some hand sanitizer, will you? We'll be right back.
Wash your hands.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Before we get to our next guest, we very much hope you continue to support all of our Inside Track sponsors. They're great. Eb Wilkinson and Gary Imus at Imus Wilkinson Asset Management. Eb's right across the table from me. Jamie and Gary Kipper at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and the folks at Corazon Cabinets, Joy, Ali, and David. Each has been with Inside Track from the start. These are great companies you should do business with. I really do mean what I say. I do business with each of them. Okay, on to our guest, Dr. Evelyn Higgins. Greetings, ma'am. Before we get to our topic on isolation, I have a burning question for you. I'm a lifelong Tucsonan, and as a kid here, the local reform school when I grew up was called Mother Higgins. and you know what I'm going to say? Whenever I was bad, I was threatened by my mom. You don't want me to send you to Mother Higgins, do you? So every time we passed by in our mom's car on the way somewhere, she reminded me to be good or I'd end up there. Now, I assume you have no connection to Mother Higgins, do you?
No.
Anyway.
Very funny. Good stuff.
All right. You have a great bio. You graduated from State University of New York and Harvard. You're a recognized international expert on fitness and diet, as well as health and wellness, and looks at health as more than just healthy or the absence of disease, but by investigating the physical, emotional, intellectual, as well as the spiritual elements of wholeness and a warm, passionate, and edutainment style. Evelyn is also a certified addiction professional and served as an official team doctor for the 1996 Somali Olympic team. Now, when you come back the next time, you're going to have to tell us about that. She does radio and has had her own shows and is a guest on local and TV radio all across the country. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, Dr. Higgins.
My pleasure.
Yeah, over the past few weeks, our lives have literally blown up, and the world, at least for now, is a very different place to live. Personally, I'm the family leader, I'm our company leader, I'm a leader in the community, and I have to stay strong for others. How can you help me stay strong, not necessarily just from a physical standpoint, but from the psychological level, when it seems like every day there are more challenges that I have to face, and really everybody does?
That's an excellent question, and really great that you're thinking that way, because as we continue, and who knows how long this will be, that's going to become a big issue for people. So I tell people to be proactive. You know, we can get into the physical part later if you want, but the emotional part is, you know, every day looking at what you have to be grateful for. It's easy to sit here and say what we don't have, what's changed, what's negative, but to look at what is good and see the silver lining, if you will, in any of this, you know, for some families, it's actually a time of reconnecting, because we live such frenetic lives that you can actually use this time to get to know each other again, you know, that kids actually have their parents at home, which doesn't exist anymore. So there's so many really, really good things. And the other parts are, as this continues, we're going to start seeing the anxiety. We're going to start seeing depression, isolation. You know, no man is meant to live in isolation. You think about warfare in the past. You know, what did they do to prisoners? Put them in exile on their own so that eventually they would die from having no communication. So there's so many things that we can do, and I'm usually beating the drum about technology, how, you know, it's turned us upside down and not always in a good way. But this is when we can actually use it for something good, to stay in the lives of the people that we care about. And actually yesterday I did a Zoom conference with a Parkinson's group, a local Parkinson's group, and I had 17 folks with Parkinson's, and it was really cool because you could see everybody's faces and everybody interacted, and it was a wonderful way to do this. And these were older folks who had to have a little bit of help to say, okay, how do I do this? I needed help. How do we do this? But, you know, it really can, if we think about the proactive part of it, what can we do? And one of the things that I have done religiously in my life, not to sound too woo-woo, was every night before I go to bed, I write five things that I'm grateful for in that day. And I could have had the most horrendous day of my life, but I'm going to come up with five reasons that I'm grateful. And that reframes our mind.
Yep.
It reframes our mentality.
It's funny you should mention that. I actually showed Bruce. I've got this written down. I tell people every day, write down three good things that happened to you that day. Now, you're ahead of me. You have five. I was happy with three. But I was showing Bruce. I had that written down as one thing to bring up to you.
You really did.
Yeah. That's because I trained under Mother Higgins. I had five and you had three, right?
Well, apparently I wasn't good enough to do the extra two.
I've checked out, you know, your information online. And you work with something called Neurotransmitter Reset Program, utilizing telemedicine in 15 countries and 22 states. Tell our listeners something about that.
Okay, so we have these neurotransmitters that reside within our bodies, or brain chemicals, common term for them, and they're actually measurable. One of the most common ones that people have heard about is serotonin, because we see so many anti-depression ads, be it TV, radio, print, whatever. You know, it's like we write 254 million prescriptions a year on antidepressants. And I could have
crazy.
A whole soapbox about that. That's insane, because the number, actually, the statistic, and when I started talking about this 14 years ago, the statistic was by 2020, the second leading cause of medical disability would be depression. Here we are in 2020. We haven't changed. We've written a heck of a lot more prescriptions, but we haven't changed that behavior. So anyway, that's just one example, because most people have heard of that. But there's dopamine, there's glutamate, there's aminobutyric acid, there's phenylalanine, there's epinephrine, there's norepinephrine. And all of these are measurable with lab work. So you think about, let's go back to that example of the antidepressant. You think about how someone's prescribed an antidepressant. They go into their doctor and they say, "Doc, you know what? I just don't have that zest of life anymore. I don't want to get off the couch. I don't want to go to see my kid's game. I don't enjoy the things I used to enjoy." Okay, you're depressed. Here, take this. We're diagnosing based on vocabulary.
Nobody's doing blood work for it.
Correct. There's technology available. And how, you know, it's kind of what I say to people is, if we have the biomarkers, then I can look at all those and look at the biochemical pathways of how each one of these chemicals should interact in our body and say, here's what we need to add or change to optimize what that chemical is. You know, my analogy is, how do we go to war if we don't know who the enemy is? But that's the way we're going through this. And it makes absolutely no sense. And literally it drives me insane, because it's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. We're not seeing those numbers change, but we stay there. So my thing is, this is, you know, it's lab work that I order for people literally all over the world. And then from that, create a protocol for what we need to do to optimize that. There is never, when I see someone's lab panel, it's never just one neurotransmitter that needs help, because in the body's infinite wisdom, it's always trying to stay in something that we call homeostasis, balance. So it's going to borrow from all of those other places to try to keep things in balance. So you start getting less than optimal in one, and before you know it, we're going to have a whole cascade of events that occurs as a result of that.
So you've got a great Facebook page. You've given a bunch of different hints on, you know, how to beat the COVID-19 blues. I'm just going to go through a couple of them because they really are great ideas. Set a limit on media consumption, including social media. Wow, that is true.
Yep.
For us, watch a lot more Amazon and Netflix. Hey, listeners, Saving Grace on Amazon, great chick flick series, 2 seasons, very funny, very interesting. Virgin River on Netflix. Mm-hmm. My wife and I are in the middle of that right now. a cute story. Yeah. Okay, you talk about staying alive. Okay, walk where you can, practice social distancing, gardening. God, what a great idea! And we see people walking again and talking with one another, maybe from across the street because you're too afraid to get up next to them. How about God? God is a big deal, obviously.
Absolutely.
And we have a lady in town, Elaine Beck. She has something called Blessings for Action. You know what she has planned? In an empty shopping center parking lot, Easter Sunday morning, a sunrise service, doing a remote sunrise service. Now, I'm Jewish, okay? I think it's a great idea, right? And I helped her get this thing set up, and she's going to have people come in their cars.
Wow.
And sit in their cars listening to the radio, listening to the sunrise service, because we want to be with people, you know? And there's just, there's all kinds of stuff like that. Okay, the other, get adequate sleep and rest, okay? I sleep like a baby. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's so important.
Mm-hmm. Avoid alcohol. Right?
That's a tough one for people, but I have it on there because alcohol really is a poison if we call it what it is. It doesn't mean that we never imbibe, but it's not.
I like my bourbon.
For consumption. Exactly. We all like a drink now and then.
Right.
But we don't have to drink like we're going to war, you know, because we all have to be in our homes. And, you know, from what you're seeing about alcohol sales, they're through the roof. So it really doesn't make sense. It just wears your body down more and it suppresses your immune system. Right now, we want to do just the opposite of that.
So you also talk about eating immune boosting foods at every meal. So what are some of those?
Like broccoli, kale, spinach.
God, I love
onions,
all those.
Garlic,
I love those.
Yeah, peppers, sweet peppers, you know, eat the rainbow, get all these colors in there. And if you do this for every meal, you will literally feel a difference within a day to 2 days. Your body will thank you, and you'll have a lot easier digestion process as well. But it really makes such a difference, and you can get so many of the nutrients that you need through our foods, which is the way we want to do it.
Thank God you avoided okra.
I think okra's great, doctor.
It tastes like elephant snot.
No, it's great.
It does, with all the hairs on it.
No,
I know.
No, it's great. It's great. It's great. I love all that stuff. Okay, so, and the other is talking about your feelings. Enjoy conversation with those who raise you up. Not talking about the crap, right, that's going on, but talking about the now and how we feel is, I don't want to get too woo-woo, like you said, but it's also talking about the future, planning a trip in the, you know, after this thing's over and having something to look forward. Okay, so how do people get in contact with you? I went to your Facebook page. How do people get in contact with you? Because you have a great message in today's world.
Well, sure. You can, if you go to my website, it's drhiggins.com, doctor spelled out, drhiggins.com. My Facebook page, evelynhiggins.509 is the address. I'm on Instagram as well. And every day I'm trying to give out these positive messages with healthy hints as well to keep everybody up. Because let's face it, we're all in this together.
Yep.
You know, we can't move ahead without raising the next guy up to move him or her ahead as well.
Dr. Higgins, not Mother Higgins, we got to take our bottom of the hour break. Thanks for joining us. Let's talk again soon. I have a feeling we may be in the COVID world for a while longer. When we come back, we'll hear from Sean Fund on the Missing in America Project. You're listening to Inside Track. Keep washing your hands. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. Our next guest is friend of the show, Sean Fund from the Missing in America Project. Sean, Missing in America was scheduled to have a ceremony later this month. It was canceled. We're sorry about that. When will the next Missing in America event take place?
Well, it's going to, and thank you, Bruce, for the time to not only talk to you, but other people in Tucson and around our area. We normally have two missions for Missing in America Project. The first one, as you have stated, was supposed to be in April on the 25th. That was canceled due to this problem we're all experiencing with the COVID virus. It's funny, I'm sitting in my veterinarian parking lot to get my dog some shots. And we're doing the, everybody's got a face mask and everybody's sitting in their car with the dog until they call you and come out and actually take your dog and they go in and you stay in the car. So we're all jumping through hoops, but hopefully at the outset of this whole thing, America, one thing we do great is we all band together in a crisis, and that's what we need to do and remember to do for ourselves, our family, and one another.
Yeah. Sean, my dad was an Army military policeman. He was a body escort and handled military funerals for many fallen heroes after World War II. Now, the project, the Missing in America project, is about interning the remains of GIs' bodies which have not been claimed. Tell us how it happens that a fallen hero's remains are not claimed.
Well, most commonly what happens, Bruce, is you have what I'll refer to as a single, or someone who's been estranged from their family or friends, unfortunately, for whatever reasons, psychologically, combination of that and physically, or just the desire to be a loner, in so many words, and they pass, and they come under, we do a majority of our work with the Pima County Public Fiduciary.
Yeah.
So when somebody passes as a single, then they go through an identification process, and we get notification that someone has passed, and then we help with the identification process to ensure whether or not that person, or I should say verify the fact that he or she is a veteran, and then we kind of take it from there with their help. There are other individuals we've come across who are in not necessarily in a nursing home, but in a aftercare living and whatnot around town, and
Right. They
have friends, and they pass, and the person takes possession of their remains because they've been cremated, but don't know what necessarily to do with the remains, and we've had quite a few people come to us in that way also.
Sean, it's Eb here. How much work do you do with the VA?
It's funny that you mentioned that. We kind of work hand in glove. I didn't mention last time I was on your show, I sit on the board for the Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Marana. So, a lot of the work that we do and we try and emphasize is kind of between Missing in America Project and the Marana Cemetery, because it's kind of like, as I mentioned before, like a hand in glove approach. We try and get our message out there as much as we can, and believe it or not, as much publicity as we have gained over the years since 2005 when I started. There's still, I run across vets every day because we have people coming from all over the country. No, I'd never heard of Missing America Project, so I make the effort to try and explain that to them. I'm going to be in the process over the course next month or so, when this hopefully all settles down for all of us, I'm going to approach the commander about getting on the base so we can actually make a presentation to different bodies of the military so that we can get the word out there for Missing in America Project.
How about like at VFW halls and DAV halls and so on?
I've done presentations, not to cut you off.
Yeah, sure.
I've done presentations at a few of the American Legion halls. I've done presentations for the Rotary Club. Any organization who hears my voice and is willing to have Missing in America Project come do a presentation of what we do, not only for veterans, but for the community in which they serve. And I'd be more than happy to do that. Either myself or Ed Torres and one of our other members will take up the gauntlet and run with it.
Well, Sean, after this current crisis is over, expect a call from me getting you in front of our Rotary Club.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Yeah, Sean's awesome. I mean, he's a great advocate, for Missing in America Project. So, how do people become a part of the cause?
strictly volunteer. You can go on, we're on Facebook, Southern Arizona Missing in America Project. We're also at our website, www.miap.com, and that's the national webpage. But we take on volunteers. Whoever wants to volunteer, you're more than welcome. Open arms.
So I think the ceremony was supposed to take place, if I'm recalling, Sean, on April 25th, and that's, of course, been put off. Are you able to do, say, at another time, you know, when things do change, are you able to do it without having to wait all the way into the fall again?
I think because of scheduling, unfortunately, with the, believe it or not, if you were to be present at the Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery, there are unfortunately funerals going on beyond what MIAP does on a daily basis.
Sure.
So it's a scheduling issue. But October, and we don't have a date yet, but October will be the next month where we'll do the next mission. We're carrying over approximately 18 veterans from this mission into the next one. Mm. So I'm assuming that it's going to be quite a large ceremony. But also, what's going to occur is that if we have the opportunity to do it at a certain date, earlier date, we will certainly get the message out there on all public information, yourself, radio, your group, and we appreciate that, Bruce, and other medias to get the word out that this mission is going to go forward.
Well, I'll tell you, Sean, you and your wife, I call her the awesome Adriana, introduced me to Missing in America Project. You two are really devoted to the cause. You guys are my heroes, and I want to be there at the next event. I think this is just a great thing that you're doing. One last question I have before we go to our next guest. Of these fallen heroes of their remains, how many of them have been cremated? How many of them, you know, are still, you know, kind of in human form in you know, typical?
Today, Bruce, I can say that, best of my recollection, we've only had two full caskets, and the rest have been cremations.
Is that a function of you know, monetary resources not being there, or is it a matter of choice? Any ideas on that?
As melancholy as an approach it may sound, it's actually, if you think about it for a minute, it's a space consideration.
Yeah.
And being able to honor as many veterans in one given place as we can. There are a lot more cremations today than there were 10, 15 years ago. But that seems to be the practice. That seems to be because it's, like I say, the public fiduciary in the county. There is a process, and cremation is the way to go with regard to their remains, and giving light to the fact that there's a space consideration down the line. Then that also helps us in our endeavor to get every veteran properly buried and honored.
And the military cemetery in Marana, it seems like it's really filling up fast, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We have, I'm going to give you a raw number. We've had 2,600 veterans since it opened have been interned, and we've only been open. We just celebrated our fourth year of the opening of the cemetery.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for visiting with us. We'll come back again. We're not going to wait until October. We'll talk about this during the summer because I think it's important that folks know about the project. I think it's a great cause, and folks, Missing in America Project, go online and find them. And I can tell you, Sean and his wife are devoted to this. You won't be disappointed. It's a great thing to get involved with. And it's hard to say that I'm looking forward to going to a cemetery, but I really do want to be part of this thing when it happens in the fall. So thanks very much for being on the show.
Thanks, Sean.
Well, I appreciate the time again, and thank you for supporting all our veterans. I want to correct one thing. So on Facebook, it'll say Southern Arizona Missing in America. Excuse me. It'll say Southern Arizona MIAP National, and it'll say dot, double dot miap.us, and that's our page.
Okay. All right. Well, Sean, thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon. And, John, do we have Steve Yates on the phone yet for us? We're going to go right ahead and take our last guest for the show today. Stephen J. Yates knows Far East policy. Our guest worked for the National Security Agency, was a national senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation from 96 to 2001. Steve later served as deputy, national deputy security advisor to the vice president, to Dick Cheney, between 01 and 05. From 05 to 06, Steve served as a lobbyist and vice president of the global affairs practice of Barber, Griffith, and Rogers. Yates was a founder and CEO at DC International since 2006, a consulting firm that advises on managing international political risk and business opportunity. Well, that had to be kind of an interesting thing at this time. Yates has been a professor of the practice with International Business Program at Boise State University and is currently a distinguished fellow at the Hamilton Foundation. And in his spare time, Steve served as a Idaho State Party chair and was a colleague of mine at the RNC. Welcome to Inside Track, Steve.
Thank you, Bruce. It's wonderful to be with you.
Yeah. The Red Chinese Communist State machine, their media allies, and plenty of Democrat socialist lackeys in and out of American government service are accusing the U.S. of starting the virus. Are the Chinese trying to cover up their own mistakes?
Oh, for sure they are. It's really, really sad that we have so much of the Blame America First crowd that's just so ready to jump on board with Communist Party propaganda. But really, there's no science behind the notion of any source for this virus other than Wuhan, China. And so the most accurate way of frame of reference for it is the Wuhan virus.
Right.
There are a number of places that have been hard hit by this. They're near abroad in Korea, Japan, Taiwan, Singapore. Ironically, the people of Taiwan are very close, of the same ethnicity, and they refer to it as the Wuhan virus. Mm-hmm. They have been better than others in resisting the virus because they invented social distancing when it came to the communist Chinese. And so that actually ended up being a public health, not just a public policy and national security asset to them in facing the current challenge.
So what can we learn from the experiences in Taiwan, South Korea, and some of the others who have been successful? I mean, I realize you're not a health expert, but you know Taiwan as good as anybody almost in America does, Steve. What can we learn from Taiwan and some of these other places who have been successful fighting the virus?
Well, first and foremost, what Taiwan was ready-made for is they knew that the Communist Party of China had them in the crosshairs. They had been subjected to a number of different attacks, political attacks, cyber attacks, real military threats, but also contagious viruses that involved livestock, agriculture products, and also human transmission. So they'd been through SARS. They'd been through swine flu. They'd been through these other issues. And so they knew that they needed to be taking people's temperatures as part of the port process on seaports and airports. They knew that they needed to keep track of who was coming and going to communist China. They knew that if people had been traveling to those geographies at a time of a spread that was known about, that they might need to be quarantined. So they had practiced these protocols so that the impact on their economy and their society, while still significant, was much, much less than it's been in other geographies. And to this point, they have not closed down their economy. They had not closed down their schools. And they have the statistics that are more resembling a modest U.S. city rather than a nation of 23 million people in terms of the spread of this virus. So I think it's their willingness to call a spade and take precautions in advance and not try to play political correct games about the name of the virus.
Stephen, this is Eb here. That's all well and good, but you've got one of the doctors, one of the heads of the World Health Organization, basically denying Taiwan even exists, not willing to acknowledge anything with them, so they're making this political.
Oh, for sure they are. there's nothing new about the Communist Party making things political. They have been playing the race card to try to deflect They've been playing power politics in this. After inventing and spreading the disease, then they'll go and give faulty test kits, faulty masks, and try to get some positive PR by giving aid. It's like an arsonist going around and trying to get credit for handing out fire extinguishers after the fact, and the fire extinguishers only work half the time. So there's no question that they play very, very crass politics on the Chinese side. And the United Nations, the World Health Organization, they've all proven that they've sold their souls in any kind of real seriousness to these organizations. I mean, they have some of the world's greatest abusers on their Human Rights Commission.
They do.
And I am sure that when they get together to tackle this virus, they're going to have the greatest abusers.
Well, they're not even reconsidering Taiwan's membership.
They are not. This to me is a great argument, not necessarily for Taiwan joining these organizations. I fully support that, but I think it's a great argument for all of us defunding these organizations.
Right,
absolutely.
Why should we pay for Chinese communist propaganda? I mean, the World Health Organization killed Americans by adopting the lies of the Communist Party, lying about its origin, delaying any notice about the spread. I mean, really, the people of New York have disproportionately paid in the cost of many, many lives, and the rest of the United States is paying in the economy for this as well. And that's because of these lies. We should not be paying for it. The rest of us shouldn't be joining.
In this morning's Wall Street Journal, Henry Kissinger says the world order is being upended. At the end of the day, Steve, who are the winners and who are the losers?
Well, I think we're at a time of inflection. I support the president's leadership through this crisis. He is the first president of the United States of my lifetime to really see China closer to what it is than all his predecessors. He had already started a rebalancing of what our relationships were on trade and national security. But frankly, Dr. Kissinger is responsible for, I think, one of the worst compromises that has led to the problem we have today.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Where his followers, it's never a bad time for more cooperation and accommodation with China. And we just give them more time and more money and more opportunity, all is going to end up well. And I just think 50 years is long enough to call the ball on this one. This experiment failed. And we've paid too much for it. So there are a lot of people that are establishment policy people that say, yeah, we've got to have cooperation with China if we're going to solve this. But I think China voted on its own when they lied and people died that we don't need that kind of cooperation.
So, Steve, will China pay and will they be made to pay?
I think the American people and a lot of other people around the world strongly believe that China should be forced to pay a price for this. There's not really any legitimate debate about where this came from and who was responsible for lying and then allowing this spread to occur so that only extreme and costly options were left for responsible governments. So it's really another big battle, 10 times larger than the populist battle of 2016 of the people versus the elites. I just think that's the way 2020 is setting up. And I think that this virus and the cost of this virus really should be rallying the people to say, we've had it with these elites coming and telling us that we have to have this so-called world order. This world order is killing people.
Is part of the price China is going to pay removing all the drug manufacturing and things like that from there?
That should be the least of it. I strongly support the effort that has been out there on that. I think that Senator Hawley, Senator Rubio, and Senator Cotton, some others really were early in January when the Democrats were wasting time and energy on impeachment. These guys, actually, we have video of them calling out that the coronavirus problem is going to be bigger than the politics of impeachment, and they were right. But the supply chain issue across the board should be one of the things that should have to change. At the very least, we should not be depending on the Chinese for our health industrial products.
So last question, we were kind of short on time here at the end of the hour, Steve. How successful are NSC Chair Robert O'Brien, Matt Pottinger, our friend, the NSC and the best of our national or the rest of our national leadership at state and in the executive branch in fighting what really is a two-front war with the Chinese has started on virus killing and overcoming the disinformation, plus the aggressive actions of China on a political, economic, as well as militaristic basis all across the globe.
Well, I really think that President Trump, Vice President Pence, National Security Advisor O'Brien, Matt Pottinger, his deputy, and Secretary Pompeo have all been excellent in this. And that's not leaving anyone out on purpose. But Matt Pottinger is probably an underappreciated all-star.
Yeah.
He's someone who served in the military. He was also a journalist in China, was arrested in China. He has seen firsthand the ugly backside of what the Communist Party regime is all about. And I think he's been very, very good and well-placed to combat this disinformation and keep a strong policy hand at the tiller there. So I think we've got a uniquely good team at the moment facing just a huge challenge with the media against them, a lot of the global elites against them. But I've really been impressed with what they've done so far. And I really, really hope that the country rallies behind what I think has been their much more rational approach to dealing with China relative to the predecessors.
Steve, in the remaining seconds, literally, we have the Hamilton Foundation. You're part of this group. Tell us a little something about the Hamilton Foundation.
Well, the Hamilton Foundation is a place where we try to engage in what we call policy entrepreneurship. We have taken the website down because it's just a small group of collaborators. So I just encourage people to go to @YatesDCIA on Twitter if they want to get through to me. And follow websites from there. And I have a group of collaborators that are from Hamilton. We still try to help support creative, strong America First foreign policies.
Hey, Steve, thanks very much for joining us. Our time is up. I hope to have you back on again soon. And thanks to everybody who's listened in. We've had some great guests here today. We've learned something from all of our great guests today. Congressman David Schweikert, psychologist Dr. Evelyn Higgins, Missing in America activist Sean Fund, and national security expert Stephen Yates. I hope you will support all of our great advertisers, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Tucson Iron and Metal, and Corazon Cabinets. Each of these companies are well-run, local family businesses. Their profits all stay in Tucson to help our community. I know each of these owners, they love our hometown and they deserve our support. Until next week, when we return with more really, really great guests for Inside Track, this is Bruce Ash.
Ed Wilkinson.
Wishing you a very, very pleasant good afternoon, a healthy week. Keep washing your hands. Say your prayers. I do something every day when I wash my hands several times a day. I'm Jewish. I say the Shema, which is the key prayer of the Jewish religion. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. I say that about 10 times, and it gets me that 20 seconds that you need. So until then, keep healthy. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening in.